to Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast, where as always, the focus is on connecting business with grassroots sports and charities, both here in England and indeed throughout the world. This is Tony Rice, and it is always an honour to welcome you to our Koi Sports members. Joining me tonight is the founder and director of Hoot & Company, Michael Brodney. Michael, I always hate these things to kick off as if it's a bit of a job interview, but I always like to get a bit of a kind of insight into, you know, our wonderful members, really. So can you just give us a bit of a background into your own story and your own kind of journey towards being a company founder?
I have a very eclectic mix, which we could probably talk all day about, of different skills and backgrounds. The desire for people to express their talent in the workplace was something quite important to me. People can read more about that on my website. But the joining together of new collaborative software, working practices often around agile and how we put them all together, was an interest of mine for many, many years. And then during the pandemic, I was running what was an experimental project, but it turned out that remote working and flexible working were and are yes. very important now. So the company's really come off the back of that work.
Absolutely amazing. And it almost seems like a culmination of a lifetime's worth of thought, thinking and living. So Hoot and Company, you mentioned some fascinating kind of aspects. That kind of agile working, that importance of flexibility and transparency. To a layman, can you just give us the kind of insight into exactly the services that you guys provide there at Hoot & Company?
Yeah, so it's a wide range of things, but helping people to think through the different problems that might exist in the digital work environment and how to imagine what that should look like. And there's so many different ways of doing it. Sometimes I literally do activities with people where we draw out a real workplace with rooms and tables and then think how we can put that into the digital world. So when you think in these terms, people might say, yes. Well, we want somewhere to socialize. So yes. It's like, well, you put that together, but then you can have it in a digital system where you can cut yourself off from that. What I often see that I try to help people fix is just information overload.
Yes.
So we've transferred some bad habits into some very powerful communication tools, which have just made it worse.
Right.
Have information overload everywhere. And actually the tools were supposed to help fix it. And it's turning it from the situation some people have created, which is quite normal, to something that really works and gets the right information to the right people.
Do you think we have been embracing naturally these kind of tools and devices? Or do you think there has been a little bit of a sense of sort of it's been forced upon us just by dint of, as you say, the pandemic?
So, a mix, isn't it? I think we've all seen people who really have took to it. Mm-hmm. And others where it had to be forced upon them.
Yes.
The changes were always inevitable. I've looked back at some of the things I've written that yes. sort of pre-2019, 2018, mm-hmm. where I was saying that this technology will happen.
Yes.
The adoption rate is going from hundreds of thousands to millions of people to tens of millions. It was an exponential curve. It looked inevitable. Certain groups I've seen have embraced it better. Interestingly, one of the really good things I've seen is that people who had disabilities or care responsibilities or yes. actually couldn't do 9 to 5 in an office and now have all these tools for asynchronous working, flexible working, and for it's thought to be up to 11 million people. This is massive benefit. So they had, you know, they've really quite embraced it. And I know a few people in that category. Including one person really who powerful, thought they wouldn't.
I think that's a really, yeah. truly powerful advantage that you've just touched on there. And I think it must be really exciting times for you to sort of be kind of, you know, really at the forefront of this this world. Is there a real danger now for any organization that is not embracing this kind of flexibility? You know, is it now gone from a nice to have to literally a business imperative, do you think?
It depends on the company is the short answer. There clearly are some industries that you get such an advantage. Mm-hmm. I've seen teams that I've worked with double their productivity mm-hmm. by getting the right information, right people, rethinking who does what bits yes. of work, laying it all out, being able to see everything, the extra visibility and, mm. and the automations you can get. You start to run away with the money, effectively, yes. if you haven't got that in place. Not every company has a good digital environment or needs one, particularly if the work's more practical and in the field. But it was often said that yes, if people don't get with the latest stuff, yes. eventually they'll be run out of business. And I think there's probably some truth in that. You can see if you're in financial technology,
yes.
you haven't got the latest stuff. There's no point starting the company. the competition's that steep.
One of the things that has truly fascinated me, talking to lots of people from all different walks of life throughout this period of time that I guess history will call the COVID era, is just quite how adaptable we can be. And sometimes it is out of necessity. Sometimes people like yourself have kind of almost seen the way the wind was going. But it really is astonishing, I think, just how, you know, we can adapt and have adapted in this period of time. Have you experienced that? Have you got that sense in your business working life?
Yeah, and I've seen no clear pattern on what type of industry should I be focusing my help on, because any industry I've looked at, there'll be some organizations where maybe one or two people usually sparked it and they did really well, and others that struggled. So you can pick industries that you think of not being traditionally digitally savvy, for example, the care sector. And yet there are organizations in there that just adapted so quickly. They won't talk about agile project management, sure. and they don't talk about, you know, use CNC software and use certain terms, but they got the philosophy and they got the right tools. And there's not a lot of improvement there. And then you see others in the same sector that it looks like they've gone back 10 years and then are still struggling.
And in terms of certain elements there, again, it's fascinating to learn about the great opportunities this provides for often ostracized elements of our world, the disabled world. It's fascinating to see there that the care elements have kind of, without necessarily using the jargon, really kind of, you know, got their head around this. Just give me an idea of how generally the world of charities and maybe the third sector, the not-for-profit sector, have been involved, and what, if anything, needs to be done to kind of move that forward.
Yeah, it is mixed. Charity is one of the sectors I think has probably struggled to get the digital environment together the most that I've seen. And having been involved in that sector, there's some massive opportunities, because where I have done some work on this, particularly on looking at some of the task tools, how tasks are allocated, it's a bit tricky to explain in a few minutes, but if we break work down, you'll find that more people will volunteer for small things than big things. So if you've broken the work down in a task system and visualized it, people can come in and volunteer for small things without making a big commitment, and they can do it flexibly. So you see volunteer numbers, 2-3-fold increases I've seen, and the amount of time that they give goes up too. That you're not giving volunteer work that's
yes.
the sort of dog's body, or it's something that you couldn't give to a staff member or staff didn't want. It's all the whole work that can be done digitally is laid out. And so you get people to volunteer, often giving skills that are much higher. So I've seen some high level of professional volunteering when that's done. And they want to, because people want to give skills that are at a level that they have, and they want to grow their career and demonstrate skills and get things on their CV. So if you let people sort of say, well, look, here's yes. what needs to be done. And if there's a framework around it, not just digitally, but how you manage that, you suddenly get a whole massive load of work and volunteer work done that wouldn't have otherwise got done. And it's so much more efficient.
Yes.
A lot of that's inspired from stuff I've done with open source companies, which is another interesting sector.
But again, it's that visibility, isn't it? And that kind of awareness of where we are, what's happening, and you know, how things are progressing. I think that's absolutely at the core of this. And talking charities, obviously, it's great to have you as a member here at Koi Sports. How did you get involved? How did you learn about Koi Sports? And yeah, just as a bit of a snapshot into that side of things, if you could.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I met Dave Johnson Rayner. Definitely it was online, because it's been since the pandemic. Somewhere online, as we're all meeting now. And I like the philosophy of Koi. I think with any business networking groups, it's nice that there's a theme and there's something more going on behind the scenes that brings people together with a shared set of values and something in common. And I quite like that, because a lot of the work I've done has a CSR element. Yes. I want to feel that there's a social change and that I'm building happy workplaces and empowering people with the right information and the right working practices, and talent can be expressed.
Absolutely.
So it kind of fitted in with those values, I guess.
And that's what's so important. It's really striking me as a general theme through all these kind of conversations I'm very lucky to share, is that sense of commonality and partnership and building a kind of network for sort of positive, bigger picture. Just give me a bit of an insight into the fact that you will personally be providing support to the Ely and Chesterton Roller Hockey Club. How did you come to select those guys for your particular sponsorship support, really?
Well, growing up, I played a little bit of football and a little bit of rugby and the normal ones, but I kind of preferred not to do those sports as much. And for me, roller hockey was the sport that I really enjoyed. The club that I used to be part of doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, which is part of the story of roller hockey. And I think it's 1939 we won the World Cup, and we used to be top, you know, in the world yes. at roller hockey. We actually invented the sport. I think it was based on polo okay. with roller skates. It's not so terribly British,
isn't it? These kind of crazy ideas that we put together into a sport and eventually become champions of the world, and then the rest of the world seems to take it over. But there we go. Fantastic.
It's another one of those stories. So it's now a very much a minority sport, and it's not cheap. And they struggle to get referees and shirts for referees and just cover volunteer expenses for people. Mm. When we do travel abroad to where it's very popular, like Spain or Portugal, yes. For children, that's a big cost often. Just getting the right skates and pads is expensive. Goalkeeping equipment is another big cost, because when you're going to be hit with a hockey ball,
yes.
you've got face, body, everything covered. So there's a lot of costs that mean that it's difficult sometimes to get into, so particularly to preserve a minority sport that we invented. And Ely, my brother still plays roller hockey, and that's his club. So I know all about sort of the challenges they have.
And it once again is absolutely at the very essence of what Koi Sports is all about. And I know they will be massively grateful for all that support going forwards. But moving this conversation forwards again, let's just focus back in on Hoots and Company. I think, again, some tremendous vital work being done in this very challenging time as we all look to adapt. I think the trendy word is pivot in these moments. Where can those listeners go who may be seeking or just curious for this kind of support and assistance, what's the best website for you guys?
You've asked a great question, because I am doing a free health check, which is really just a conversation and a bit of an audit. So that people can look at that on my website, which is www.hootencompany.co.uk/check. So if people want to look there and they're the right kind of company and it fits, then we can have a chat about the things they can improve and I can explain how that can help. Otherwise, I guess the places I started, I encourage people to play with the software, not perhaps your main company tenant, but you can get another one, you can get another version, you know, paying £10 a month and just play with it, which is one good way of learning. And particularly on how often the trouble people have, it's not knowing what button to push. It's now that we've got these options, how should we put this together? What's the working practice? How should we structure a video meeting? Which chat channel should we use? We know how to use 10, but we don't want 10 that are all the same with no policies or rules.
Yeah, of course.
What should that look like? So there's some interesting, you'll find a lot of interesting stuff online about this.
You know, I think you've made such a powerful point there, because I think it pertains across lots of different aspects of our world, that sometimes it is just through trial and error, play, embrace. Because I'm, from my own perspective, a little bit of a technophobe, to be perfectly honest. I've basically taught myself the rudiments of kind of editing for my life and my passion here at Koi Sports. But my fear isn't that I can't do it. It's if I press the wrong thing, the whole thing will go defunct on me. And it's not happened yet, if that makes sense. So I like the idea of just kind of, you know, embrace and play and, you know, you will find the way. But more importantly, Michael, I would say it's great that there are people, experts and gurus like yourself there to steer us through this. Once again, remind me, please, of that crucial website and that free health check functionality.
So my website is www.hootencompany.co.uk. And if you put /check, that will take you to the health check page. And then you can get in touch with me. So companies that are somewhere sized between about 10 and 100 are the ones where internal communication is, I can generally help them. If it's corporate, I get a bit nervous about corporate systems. And if it's a company of one, you hopefully haven't got lots of internal communication trouble unless you're talking to yourself. so that's generally a good place where I go. And I'm also a Microsoft partner, so I tend to look at Office 365. But if that sounds like you, then you can get in touch. I really look at everything from the software, how it's configured, working practices, values I've learned matter a surprising amount, because the software was built with a certain style of management in mind. And if we don't quite get that right, you end up in conflict with your own systems.
Right. And again, the more you play, the more you learn, the more you kind of benefit from the visibility and the fluidity that this style of tech and tech working will equip you with. I guess this is a very challenging question, but it is fascinating to me, because again, it was really compelling to learn that, you know, back well in advance of the pandemic, you sort of had a flavor that this was kind of almost inevitable. Can you now, in our here and now, get a sense or give us maybe an aspect of future gazing as to what could be next in this ever more agile working and digital arena?
Yeah, I would look towards some of the techiest companies and see what they're doing, because bearing in mind they make the systems now. So people think of communication software as being an IT thing, but this is how we communicate. This is the platform. It's where the visuals are, where we talk in the spoken word, in the written word. It's a fundamental pillar of any organization. And if these are the companies that are building it, we should probably look at the direction they're taking and what their values and views are, because that ultimately is going to come down to the companies that have, like us, that are buying the software. Mm-hmm. It's best, ultimately, we talked about visibility, that we've got management that embrace visibility, much more teamwork, mm-hmm. that want everyone in the team to be aware of each other, mm-hmm. like a great sports team, yes. where the great sports teams have an awareness of the different players on the field. We want that in the digital environment rather than what's sometimes called the email warrior that just sends yes. out email instructions of what to do, which feels horribly isolating. And I'm not a fan of that at all. The systems don't really want you to do that. So we're likely to see more kind of visualizations mm-hmm. of what's happening around us, which won't look like an office. We've still got the office for that, but it's, you'll get the information you want better because of more visuals. And I think it's getting people to learn the best means of communication. So we used to have the CC everybody on an email mm-hmm. Problem. Now we have groups, but some of those groups have 20 or 50 people in, and then you send messages, you get two or three people talking to each other, and the other 47 people in that group have got all these messages they didn't want. And then they turn the notifications off and they miss the important
The crucial moments.
There's all of that to figure out. I have some activities that help people do that, but it's learning. There's a whole process of learning how we actually use this technology in the best way.
And it is a fascinating time. And I love the fact that you've really got your finger on the pulse and are genuinely helping lots of individuals, lots of organizations really through this kind of digital epoch. Michael, again, hit me up, please, with the best website so that we can all benefit from some of your kind of wisdom and insights.
Oh, well, homepage, www.hootandcompany.co.uk.
Absolutely splendid. Is there anything in closing you'd like to draw to our attention or simply crystallize for us?
I don't know. I think we've covered a lot of the main aspects. For me, the biggest opportunity really is getting the right information to people with the right working practices. It means that people are empowered to make more decisions, to work at their best, at the time that's best for them. And it also means that people who perhaps can't do a traditional 9-to-5, of which there are millions, can be included in a workplace, which should be one of the biggest benefits that we can draw from all of the changes.
Absolutely brilliant, Michael. I've really enjoyed your time and your company. I'd like to wish you every continued joy, success and happiness. And just thank you for joining us today on Koi Sports Grassroots Podcasting. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Tony.
Earlier in this very podcast, we've just heard from Koi Sports member Michael Brodley from Hoot and Company. He's kindly offering support to the wonderful Ely and Chesterton Roller Hockey Club. Now, from that very organization, it's a joy to welcome to you Brian Barrow. Brian, hello.
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Hey, top man. Well, as I say, real great pleasure to speak with Michael. I know he's very passionate about all things Ely and Chesterton Roller Hockey Club. But for the uninitiated, tell me more about roller hockey. I mean, I think once upon a time we were champions of the world, weren't we?
Yes. If you go back long enough, it's basically hockey indoors on roller skates, as the name would suggest. It's the four-wheel version, so there's an inline roller hockey, which is more like ice hockey in rules, and then there's this hockey, which is also called rink hockey, or roller hockey is the more recognisable name. Four skates, old-fashioned skates. England were the champions until about the Second World War.
Right.
Even people like Charlie Chapman used to play. There used to be skate halls all over the UK and very, very popular back in the day. And then the war came, and then after the war, it's sort of a lot of the skate parks, a lot of them were outside, they died, mm-hmm. Closed down, and the Southern Europeans took over because they had better weather, I suppose, and government support and sport that took off in certain places.
Big in Spain, I believe.
Yeah, Spain. It's in Catalonia mainly. So it's that particular Barcelona region, and also Portugal, Argentina, and Italy is probably the four biggest nations.
I was talking with Brian, and a real joy to speak with him. So Michael over at Hooting Company, and he was saying that there's almost a different culture in support in, for instance, Spain, whereas I think everybody knows the Nou Camp, everybody knows Barcelona. I think they've almost got affiliations with roller hockey. Is there that sense that there is a completely different way of embracing how we engage in enjoy sports across the continent compared to here in England?
Yeah, well, in Spain and Portugal, they have a lot of the clubs are sports clubs. So, and there will be a number of sports all under the same umbrella. So Barcelona have a roller hockey team, and it's part of the Barcelona club as such, as do Porto, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica. They are all the big names in roller hockey in Europe, basically, and they're all tied in similar to basketball than it is to, hockey or anything else, because it's very much counter-attack, backwards and forwards. Obviously, played in a similar sort of size rink as basketball, with a similar sort of number of players, I suppose. So, and a lot of similar sort of moves, and it's non-contact as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it has similarities to basketball, strangely.
Again, it's certainly something I feel as though I need to experience. I've got a feeling it's once you've experienced, never look back. Great to learn about the history here. Great to experience the fact that once upon a time we were champions of the world, and how that this is still thriving across the continent. Here in Blighty, Ely and Chesterton, you are keeping this alive, keeping this fresh. Tell me more about Ely and Chesterton, and how we can learn more about you guys.
We're obviously one of about 20 odd clubs in the UK. There are some sort of older clubs, but the oldest roller hockey club in the world is in the UK, as we were talking about sort of world champions pre-war. But so there are a few clubs that have survived for a lot of years, but not many clubs. We originally started as Ely in 1999, and about 4 or 5 years ago, we combined with a sort of club in Cambridge to is where the Ely and Chesterton came from. We had a very good sort of older age group section, and the Chesterton side had quite a good younger section. We had a younger section as well, but they had nowhere really to progress as they sort of got sort of 15, 16.
Gotcha.
And started looking at sort of more senior level, they had nowhere to go, and it suited combining the two together. So that's where the name comes from. And we sort of call ourselves ECU now. It tends to be the more common name, but Ely and Chesterton United is the full name.
Brilliant. That's so crucial, isn't it, when you pool resources with other similar organisations. And obviously, it's literally at the very core of what Koi Sports is all about, the important role grassroots sports plays within our communities. And again, great to hear from Michael and the great work that he's doing to support you guys. Just give us a flavour of precisely how that kind of support will prove beneficial for you.
Well, this particular support, we've sort of put it towards the refereeing side of the sport in two ways, really. At the top end, and we do play in the Premier League, which is the sort of the senior top end of the sport. 7 clubs play in that. And we have allocated referees each match, 2 referees a match. And their travel expenses have to be paid by the home club. Mm. So that is an expense that we have every year. And at the younger end, it tends to be a lot of parents end up drawn into refereeing. And, the sport's very good in terms of it's trying to be a lot more professional. So you need the right sort of kit and everything else. So there are sort of proper referee shirts that you have to have. And they have a cost, and as a club, we like to pay for that for the parents who kindly volunteer to to do it. So, the money's gone sort of both ways, really. So, but sort of into the refereeing side, because without referees, we haven't got a sport, basically. So,
that is absolutely key, isn't it? We forget this, don't we? And we're all armchair fans, and we all think we know it all, and like to give referees a bit of grief from time to time. But you're dead right there. Without a referee,
whatever your sporting
you got no game, have you?
No, exactly. And like I say, there are those that give up the time or enjoy refereeing from a sort of higher end, and you know they have travel expenses to get places. And like I say, that at the lower end, it's often parents that get roped into do it. There's a proper refereeing structure in roller hockey, so they become sort of lower level than level 1, 2, 3, 4, and progress up and can do it at a higher level if they want. And even internationally, there is a couple of referees in the country that referee overseas in international tournaments, so you can progress up through. But a lot of them started as either ex-players or parents that are roped in to do it for their kids.
I just think that's a truly brilliant use of resource there, and we are delighted to be able to provide that for you. And I know Michael is a very keen supporter of everything that you guys are all about. I think it's appropriate, though, for us all, if we're eager maybe to learn more, maybe want to get involved in this fast, frenetic sport, where maybe we can help restore the luster of Blighty's pride as things progress. Where can we go for more information about
it? Right, we have a web address, but actually linked straight into a Facebook page. So elyrhc.co.uk, or if you do Ely and Chesterton United, and we have a Facebook page, which is basically where we put all our regular news stories, and you'll see reports on our Premier League teams and some of our younger teams. And in fact, a couple of our younger teams have competed in European competitions this year, late last year. So there's reports on that, and sometimes there's a few live links, sometimes for matches and things. So there's not anything to pick up on that. And other clubs have a similar things. So Facebook tends to be what most of the clubs use for their sort of news reporting and updates and things like that. Obviously other clubs in the region, you'll find out about them.
Tell you what, it sounds really exciting times there, and I think there's going to be exciting times ahead. Once again, remind me and those listening of the best way that we can engage with you, either online or across social.
Basically via our Facebook page, where we put mostly the reports on matches and upcoming matches, particularly Premier League matches. People come and watch, so we'll announce those and what times they are and where they are, and people can come and find us. Or if you're looking at sort of the younger end, you can message us through that. And for example, we have a sort of a learn fun to skate section in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. The youngsters who want to get into it, they often start by just skating, and then if they think roller hockey might be something they want to try out, they progress onwards from there. So those sessions are held in Chesterton term times on a Saturday afternoon.
I mean, just get involved. What have you got to lose? And you could fall in love with a completely new sport, which sounds like it is going to be one where you get a great sense of community, great for fitness, and a whole heap of fun too. Brian, it's been a whole heap of fun for me to engage with you. Is there anything in closing you'd like to draw to our attention, or just remind me about at all?
No. Just, like I say, it's one of these things that a lot of people have never seen before. And but, the joys of social media and everything else. Now, if you actually Google things and YouTubes and things like that, you can find matches, you can find all sorts of things to have a look at. So, if it's something of interest to you. And like I say, if you're into skating, and actually it's one of these things that, to get into, you really need to be able to skate. So yes. Skating comes first. Get involved with a local club, and who knows? And actually, because it's only a relatively small sport, yet they compete in quite prestigious competitions, it's actually a sport you can get to represent your country in quite easily, in a way, because there's not the big numbers that there are playing football, rugby and things like that. So it is a sport that if you get into, you can progress as far as you really want to.
To appreciate your time and your company, I would like to wish you everybody there at Ely and Chesterton Roller Hockey Club, the ECU, every continued success, joy and happiness. Brian, thank you once again for your time just now.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you.
This has been Tony Rice for Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast. If you like what you've heard and are interested in becoming a member of Koi Sports CIC, or simply looking for more information about all our phenomenal members and, of course, the amazing work being done here, take a moment and simply visit www.koisports.co.uk. I'll repeat, that's www.koisports.co.uk. And be sure to listen in next week for another Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast.